What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, more pitching podcast from pitcherlist.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is May 28th. And yes, we are going to talk about baseball. My gosh, we got to talk about Cade Horton. He went against the White Sox. And here's the thing with Cade Horton. I wasn't in earlier in the season. I said, look, I think this guy doesn't have a good fastball. I think that his breaking ball is good. It's not like the greatest thing ever. And he's hurt, and we don't know when he's going to arrive, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to be good. I was wrong. Why was I wrong? Because I didn't assess that the fastball is actually a cut fastball, and that changes things. He's not trying to get a ton of whiffs with his four-seamer, but is a very effective pitch to get outs inside the zone. It also works well against left-handers, which means that the sweeper that Cade Horton has doesn't have to be the money pitch against lefties. He has the answer. He's got right-handers for sweepers, and he has lefties for cut fastballs. It makes sense. But the thing is, I don't really know if there's quite enough to elevate him into, say, Hollyland, the top 50 or so, and our Hollywood. Oh my gosh. And 6 innings, 200 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, 6 Ks. Seems like it goes against what I just said. But right, the schedule. Oh, the schedule's been so good for Cade Horton. This was rocky road. And I do think that he's going to stick in the rotation instead of Ben Brown. Ben Brown is not a complete pitcher. Think of it in the same way of fastball, breaking ball. But Horton has a little bit more to mess around with. He has some sinkers in there. He had one really good changeup. And the other five he threw were not a strike. Actually, one other strike. But it was, I think it was like 2 for 6, something like that. He also has a curve in there too against lefties, which is okay. But it's, long story short here is that Cade Horton is more of a complete pitcher than Ben Brown. And I think that he sticks around. Ben Brown goes away. The schedule is still good right now for Cade Horton, so we're going to keep going with it. But don't expect him as the big breakout rookie pitcher. Carlos Rodon, he got his aces gonna ace tag because let's be honest, 7 innings, 0 runs, 5 hits, 0 walks, 10 Ks. I always expect him to dominate, and it makes a lot more sense than someone like Hunter Brown, who also had a very good start, but we'll get to him later, and he doesn't have the aces gonna ace tag, and he probably should, and I understand that everyone wants it, but there's a little bit more confusion about what he does versus Carlos Rodon, who then took down batters with changeups with 5 whiffs. He had 8 whiffs on the slider, 7 on the four-seamer, had a gallows pull, 21 whiffs. Like, he has one of the best strikeout rates in baseball. In fact, if you go to our player pages right now, oh my gosh, you will see he has a 32% K rate, and that's 12th best among all starting pitchers. That's amazing. You normally don't get these ratios without strikeout rate too. Okay. You get a Jack Flaherty, 6 innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts, 13 whiffs, 34% CSW. And what's really interesting, this one, the breaking balls weren't that good. They were about 50% strike rates between the slider and the curve. You didn't get a single whiff on the slider as it was never chased out of the zone. That is very odd. But what is also odd is the four-seamer going nearly 17 inches of vert and a 1.7 height adjusted VAA. What? Jack Flaherty, oh my gosh, 7 over 51 whiffs on that pitch, and he didn't even like land it all the way up top. I wonder if something changed here. I wonder if he's messing around a little bit maybe with some arm angle or some little extra elements, and maybe that's why the curve and the slider weren't as effective. It might be something that he's balancing out, but we keep rolling with this. It seems like it's a new skill to correct the old skills, but generally what that means is the new skill will go away and the old skills won't return. Until that new skill goes away. It's a common thing with pitchers. I'm not going to think that we're going to have our cake and eat it too with an elite fastball and elite secondaries, but early lead breaking balls. But hey, I'm glad that he found a way to do this one. Ranger Suarez against Atlanta killed it. And here's the thing, Ranger Suarez, when he gets into rhythm, he's great. We've seen this many, many times before. There's always something in the season that interrupts him, whether it's an injury, whether it's him just falling out of that rhythm. And then you kind of drop him. He's not really a 6-inning, 8-strikeout stud. He just gets into this moment. So that's pretty cool. Bowden Francis against the Rangers. I guess the Rangers are just kind of that bad because these fastballs were not amazing fastballs. They were just over the plate, and they decided they couldn't do anything with it. 5 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 6 Ks. Yeah, 68% four-seamer usage here. You don't really want to go for Bowden Francis. Richard Fitz showed up, 3 innings, 0 runs, but it was 44 pitches. And I don't think he's going to be in the rotation moving forward. If it is, he's not stretched out. And it's cool because he's at 96 with 17, 18 inches of vert and attack angle, like 1.2. I mean, this is great. And then he has an 89 mile per hour slider for 63% strikes. Like, this is awesome, but he's not really going to get the opportunities. And even if he did, and the schedule's not good and he's not stretched out, the whole thing. You don't want to go for Fitz right now, maybe later. Nathan Eovaldi, guess what? He's been so good, and he only pitched 2 innings. Why? Because he has tricep tightness. Apparently, he's going to make his next start. It's not that bad. Precautionary. You know this is not going to go away. So, yeah, I'm really upset about it. Eovaldi has been a staple of many a rotation for me this year because he was at that point in my drafts where I thought, okay, it was Eovaldi, Rodon, and Lugo were like the last three of my, yes, you add these and you don't drop them the entire year. And one has become an ace, two has become an ace, and three has been on the IL. But don't do this to me, Eovaldi, okay? Logan Evans against the Nationals got the wins. 8 innings, 1 run, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 4 Ks. You're like, Logan Evans, really? That one, not like Logan Henderson? Yeah, Logan Evans with the Mariners. This was in the tee and against the Nationals. He got a lot of help from Koufax. Only 5 whiffs here in 8 innings. 88 pitches, and he likely isn't making another start with Logan Gilbert and Bryce Miller right around the corner, and I'm not really interested in this. Now, I did have a conversation with a pitching coordinator of a major league team about extension and how there are certain guys, like Ben Kasparias, for example, who have lower extension, but what that does is if they are secondary focused, is it gives more time for the pitches to break, and generally they ramp up in that movement, right? Becomes more aggressive as they go, which is kind of interesting. And it does give a thought to, hey, these lower extension guys, it doesn't mean it's always good. Now, if you're forcing focus, you want to be extension, but maybe if you are 85% secondaries, as Logan Evans was here, only 15% fastballs, maybe this helped. It's interesting. And now I'm including cutters inside of this because that's under 90 miles per hour. I think that's the right thing to do. That is part of his secondary package. But I don't really buy into that a ton. I still think that it's better to have more extension and to just give less reaction time in general. But it is something to think about and explore. And maybe Logan Evans is a good example of that here. Not necessarily for whiffs, but just to make worse contact. Right. You have Hunter Brown, as I mentioned before, 6 innings of 8 strikeouts and 1 run, 6 hits, 0 walks, and 1 run, 8 Ks in 6 innings for Hunter Brown. This was against the Athletics, got the win. And this is what I'm going to say to everyone. Carlos Rodon makes sense because I know what he does. He has a fastball and a slider and a changeup, and those are really generally good. Sometimes the curveball shows up fine, but those are the reasons why he's an ace, he's going to ace guy. You have Nathan Eovaldi, 4 pitches, all of a sudden changed with the curveball becoming a major weapon. Those all of them for strikes. That has become a huge thing. The splitter has been great, etc. Four-seamer and cutter as well. All these guys, we understand how they get their outs and how this is consistent. Start to start, you know what you're going to get. Hunter Brown, you don't. And I ask everyone listening right now, what is the number one pitch for Hunter Brown? And what would you say is also the put-away offering for him, or really the big whiff pitch in his secondaries? So before this, I would probably tell you his best pitch is his four-seamer. It's been 96, has been 97 above, but really it's fallen down to 96, okay. And then he has a sinker that he sometimes uses in the zone. That gets good separation. That's fine. That generally works in the zone. And then secondaries, he's kind of figuring out. Sometimes it's the curve, sometimes it's the slider, cutters. There's changeups, but none of them are really elite. And that's always been what's so weird with me, is that he doesn't have a big whiff pitch in the secondary department. And the four-seamer is doing well with a super high put-away rate, but it really shouldn't. And it's not really as elite as the other four-seamers we've seen. That's why I've just felt that this is a weird package and not really something that speaks to just dominant, deserved success. So I ask all this and I say, okay, great. Hunter Brown, how did he have his success yesterday? It felt like, I think Eric Smolski and I said he was the better, harder throwing version of someone like Chris Bassett, who's a kitchen sink. Well, Hunter Brown threw 5 changeups, 1 for 5 strikes, and then threw 2 fastballs and a curveball. So essentially it was a 3-pitch mix with 2 fastballs, right? What? His sinker was most thrown about half of the time, and it was pretty much middle in, if not more along the inside edge to right-handers throughout this game. But keep in mind, he allowed 4 of his 10 hits on that, or actually 4 out of 10 balls in play were hits. He allowed a solo home run on the pitch. 74% strike zone. The four seamer was more safe for strikeouts. It had three strikeouts upstairs on it. The curveball was four whiffs on it and had 47% CSW and also got four of those strikeouts, but it wasn't, you know, normally when I see guys really dominant with a breaking ball, it has this clump of where they're locating. They're trying to do a certain thing and they do it often. Sometimes you see guys that throw a curveball higher in the zone, maybe it's 001 and then the lower one later, but this was just kind of like, where's it going? And it worked, right? And this is why I marvel at Hunter Brown. I'm like, what are you doing? How is this really so good? I don't know. And that's maddening for me. I don't know what he's going to throw and what the package is the next start or two. So that's why I'm not as in on Hunter Brown. Maybe I should just give him aces going to ace anyway, just to, I get it, because you're not going to bench him at this point. And he had that bad start last time. He rebounded here. That's good. But yeah, he's just very strange. All right, we have a lot more to talk about. As I tried to make this one shorter of a podcast, but those are two very interesting guys that I need to go more in depth with. And we're going to talk about all of them after this break. Tyler Anderson against the Yankees, 6 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts. It's a gold star for Tyler Anderson. This is against the Yankees. Oh my gosh. He got a lot of help with Koufax. He has a rough schedule, so we're not going to jump into that. Joe Ryan, remember this last week where he threw like 92 miles per hour and quote unquote relief because he came in during the suspended game? So it was days later, he came in relief to start in that one. And so he was technically a reliever on our player page, and it was so frustrating to deal with because we essentially treat it like your position is the last one that you threw in. So if you were a reliever, then you're a reliever now. Yeah, it's weird. Anyway, Joe Ryan, 6 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts against the Rays. He did locate lower, like middle height, that is Wylock for the four-seamer, but two height-adjusted VA is 2.0, which you never see. And he also sat 94.4. Yeah, Joe Ryan was at 92 and change before. We've been hoping to see 94 this year. 94.4 with a 2 height-adjusted VAA is bonkers. As long as he gets that thing upstairs more, then it's good. Maybe that's like he was trying to throw harder and the height-adjusted VA was lower. That means he was locating lower. I don't know. Maybe those are correlated. But regardless, he's amazing. He's going to ace there for Joe Ryan. Like, you know what he's going to do. Okay. Aaron Civale against the Red Sox. 5 innings and 1 run, but really, the Red Sox aren't very good right now. And Savali's breaking balls are really lagging behind. And I just did not feel like this was a very good game for him. And I'm happy it worked out for him, but I'm not in. Spencer Strider against the Phillies. 4.2 innings, 1 run, 7 Ks, 1 hit, 4 walks. Why? Because his slider had a 41% strike rate. Oh my gosh. And the four-seamer was just 4 for 49 whiffs. He needed 90 pitches to go 4.2 innings. That's not it. The heater is at 95, and he did, for the most part, maintain it. If you don't know, on our PL Pro live pitch app, yes, as live Statcast data, we have an incredible set of widgets that we showcase the game for you in PL Pro only. And on the bottom, we have the whole sequence of every pitch that he threw color-coded, so it's actually really fun to go and see what he threw per inning, per batter, and velocities involved. So you can actually see very quickly the last pitches were like, yeah, 94 and change. He did throw a 93.7, I think, in that final batter, but he did recuperate from it, and it's pretty much 95 the whole way through. We need to see Spencer Strider 96, 97 to feel like he can really dominate. 4 over 49 whiffs is not it. Now, generally the right vicinity, like upstairs with a four-seamer and then down with a slider, but 41% slider strikes is not it, right? So we should get back to something beneficial here, but it might not be the same old top 10, top 5 Spencer Strider. He does get a good schedule ahead, but without that velocity, really, it's not going to be the same. Just throw more slider strikes. Okay, cool. Daniel Lynch got the Reds carpet, but he only went 2.2 innings and 42 pitches because it's the Royals and Daniel Lynch. Okay, on the other side was Brady Singer against the Royals, 7 innings and 3 Ks. 2 earned runs, though, 8 base runners. And what's happening right now is the slider is not very good for Brady Singer. What? This is the pitch. I know. But it just hasn't been. It hasn't been getting double-digit whiffs. So, I'm still going to throw him, I think, against the Brewers in Great American Ballpark, but I feel like this is a good sell high moment because Singer's really, something's going on with that slider. And I think it's going to burn him soon enough. Taj Bradley had a great start and it was very funny watching the cutter just land on the edges. And we all know that Bradley can't actually do that at will. So good stuff. 7 innings of 2 runs, but we're not going to trust us. His splitter lost 3 inches of vert. It gained 3 inches of vert. That means it lost drop. That's not good. That's not a good thing for the splitter. Corbin Burns went against the Pirates, which is nice. 7 innings of 2 runs. Yeah, 6 hits, 2 walks, 6 Ks. It's good. It's what you should be doing for the most part. That said, 4 out of 43 whiffs on secondaries for Corbin Burns. Consider that you're not going to be throwing that low cutter, low vert cutter, the one with drop. You got to do more with your secondaries to get whiffs. And 4 over 43 is kind of frustrating. 7 whiffs over 103 pitches for Corbin Burns. Yeah, that's not cool. I don't like that. I think of him as a Holly. I don't think of him as an ace. Germán Márquez against the Cubs. 6 innings of 200 runs. That's a lovely birthday party. He had 8 whiffs and 32 curveballs in Wrigley. That's great. We don't care. We're not starting that one, but we're just happy for him. Tyler McGill against the White Sox. Got a win. 5.2 innings of 200 runs. 4 hits, 4 walks, and 6 Ks. He did not tease the zone with his slider, but he got whiffs on those pitches out of the zone. Thank you so much, White Sox. And I don't love the fastball, which is kind of funny, by the way. 71% zone rate, but a 68% strike rate. Think what I just said. He threw the ball in the zone 71% of the time, and the four-seamer had a 68% strike rate. This is why? Because he threw one in the zone, wasn't called a strike, and he got no chases out of the zone. Yeah, interesting. He gets the Dodgers next. That's a very clear bench, and I'm not as encouraged about McGill as I was before. Logan Webb, it's really just because the four-seamer command isn't there. The slider is not really being located the same way it was before. It's a little more precarious than it used to be. Has been this way for a couple weeks now. Logan Webb against the Tigers. 6 innings, 3 runs, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts, 20 whiffs. It's too bad it was the Tigers, huh? Yeah, Andre Pallante against the Orioles. 5.2 innings of 3 runs, blah, blah, blah. 7 Ks. 9 base runners, almost got that VPQS. That is a very poor quality start. He threw this cut fastball in the inner half to lefties at 94-95. It generally works, but I mean, I don't really want to go for this. He shouldn't get semi strikeouts typically. I'm just not really a fan of this. I think he needs something else to pair with that cut fastball. But I do recognize it is a good defense behind him, and Andre Pallante is a decent play for a quality start here and there. I always get his name wrong. I see it, and my dyslexia just kicks in. Tomoyuki Sugano, 5.1 innings of 300 runs, 8 hits, 0 walks, and 3 Ks. This is the floor that we normally see from a guy like Sugano of Toby, where the splitter wasn't good this time. He did make up for it with cutters inside the lefties to adjust. That's nice to see. But yeah, when he didn't have his good stuff, he found a way to kind of get through as much as he could. Fine. I think I'm okay with starting him in Seattle at the tee next. Dustin May against the Guardians got the win. 5 innings, 300 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 9 strikeouts. Oh, that's really cool. But this was a massive left-handed lineup. And that means that we were going to see more cutters, which we did. I love them. 92, 93, 20% usage. That's cool. The four-seamer isn't really that good. And he's not really utilizing that one. The sweeper was way too much in the zone. The sinker was way too much in the zone. And it bothers me because I feel like Dustin May has these tools, but yeah, I don't trust this command. I do like more cutters. He only faced lefties, say for one righty. But are we going to see that against right-handers too? Or are we going to really see him go 20% cutters against lefties? Why isn't he throwing more than 20% to lefties? I don't know. We'll see. I want to continue with this because I feel like by July, August, he's going to be different. He's going to be showcasing, you know, what it's like to go through a full season. But I don't know how I feel really about the Mets, Cardinals, and Giants. I feel like I want to do it, but I understand it's not really dominant. He's still kind of figuring it all out. And you can see that in those at-bats. Tanner Bibee on the other side of this against the Dodgers. 5 innings of 400 runs, 7 hits, 3 walks, and 7 strikeouts. 35% CSW for a King Cole, which is, whoa, what? Really? Oh my gosh. The thing here is that Tanner Bibee just did not have a good feel for his pitches around the zone. Like, it was just chaos, and changeups are floated upstairs. He had one swing outside of the zone on his cutter, four-seamer, and sweeper. I am not sold by Tanner Bibee right now. Mitchell Parker against the Mariners in Seattle. Yeah, he's not really what we want. And at some point, he's kind of like Bailey Falter, where he has 7 feet of extension. I feel like if he actually gets his tools, you know, working correctly, they're actually something to like here, but I'm not going to sit around for that. You have Max Meyer against the Padres. It was terrible. 0 strikeouts. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? 3.1 innings of 4 runs, 7 hits, 2 walks. He gets Rocky Road next. Do you want to do that? 89 to 90 mile per hour slider is the velocity we want, and it's really strange to see zero whiffs on that pitch. It's the Rockies. Like, you gotta think that should work, right? Oh, man. Now, PJ, by the way, is in chat right now, as he's, of course, hoping to get a month free of MLB.TV, because, of course, playback chat all week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Today's Wednesday. We are giving away a free month of MLB.TV, and he's asking me to give him a shout-out about Andre Pallanta. I'm like, PJ, it was almost a very poor quality start. He didn't even get there. It was a no decision. Not a start I wanted to make. He wanted him to be in the, at the very least, questionable start, if not the probable start yesterday. 7Ks, that's nice, but we don't expect that to continue at all for Pallanta. PJ, okay. Anyway, Max Meyer, I'm probably not doing that. He probably have a good opinion about him. He's a Marlins fan. I don't know if I want to do that for Max Meyer. It'll be questionable, even though it's Rocky Road. Mike Burrows against the Diamondbacks. Obviously not someone you should go for in that situation. And I really don't think that Mike Burrows is that kind of prospect pitcher that you want to be chasing. So you, no thanks for that. And same with Jonathan Cannon and Steven Kolek. I mean, pretty obvious you're not going to go with those. And JP Sears has had three straight poor outings after looking like he was having a mini breakout of quiet success with his ratios. Ah, small sample size of early in the season. Ah, yeah, always look at the pitches themselves, guys, not the results of those games. Much more predictive than the just the past results. That is it, though, for today. Speaking of results, this is the final result of this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. And the best thing that you can do is go find the Fantasy Baseball, Pitchers Fantasy Baseball podcast feed, the big one, and give us a rating and review. Same thing on the Plus Pitch podcast, The Craft, OTC, all of our shows. It goes so far for us securing sponsorships, and it just takes a moment just to give us 5 stars. Spotify works well too. So whatever you guys listen to this podcast on, please make sure you do that. Take a moment. And if you spent this time to sit through the end, you are awesome. You get 15% off PL Pro yearly with promo code podcast. Podcast. 15% off PL Pro yearly. That is it for today. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.